This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehis Wuhib. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight,
social media site Twitter is buzzing with jokes about how the U.S. presidential election is starting to resemble one of Africa's messy political contests. It is a rare chance for the continent to poke fun at American politics. But analysts say the reality is not funny.
That's VOA's Anita Powell reporting from Johannesburg. Details coming up.
Also, the number of South Sudanese refugees in the Democratic Republic of Congo has nearly doubled in the last month. And South African police fire rubber bullets at protesting university students demanding free tuition.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on African News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump refused to promise that he will accept the results of the U.S. election in his third and final debate with Democrat Hillary Clinton yesterday. The two White House hopefuls also clashed over Russia, immigration, and appointments to the U.S. Supreme Court in the debate held in Las Vegas, Nevada. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has a wrap-up of the third debate from Washington.
For the second straight debate, there was no handshake between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump in their final face-off. Perhaps the most significant moment came when Trump was pressed by moderator Chris Wallace about his repeated claims that the U.S. election process is rigged against him.
That you will absolutely accept the result of this election.
I will look at it at the time. I'm not looking at anything now. I'll look at it at the time. What I've seen is so bad. First of all, the media is so dishonest, and they've poisoned the minds of the voters.
Clinton said she found Trump's response horrifying and said it ran counter to U.S. political tradition.
He is denigrating. He's talking down our democracy. And I, for one, am appalled that somebody who is the nominee of one of our two major parties would take that kind of position.
Trump and Clinton also clashed over whether Russia is trying to influence the election process through cyber attacks, which U.S. intelligence officials believe is the case.
Finally, will Donald Trump admit and condemn that the Russians are doing this and make it clear that he will not have the help of Putin in this election, that he rejects Russian espionage against Americans, which he actually encouraged in the past.
When pressed, Trump said he would, of course, condemn Russia for the activity if it was true. But he also said China or others could be behind the cyber attacks.
I don't know Putin. He said nice things about me. If we got along well, that would be good. If Russia and the United States got along well and went after ISIS, that would be good. He has no respect for her. He has no respect for our president.
Trump was also on the defensive over allegations from at least 9 women who say he groped them sexually.
Well, first of all, those stories have been largely debunked. Those people, I don't know those people. I have a feeling how they came. I believe it was her campaign that did it.
Clinton sought to defend those making the allegations.
You know, Donald thinks belittling women makes him bigger. He goes after their dignity, their self-worth. And I don't think there is a woman anywhere who doesn't know what that feels like.
The candidates also offered different views on Supreme Court appointments, abortion, and immigration when Trump again called for a border wall. But Clinton said he would rip families apart. With Hillary Clinton now holding an expanded lead of about 7 percentage points, early voting is underway in more than 30 states. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Social media site Twitter is buzzing with jokes about how the U.S. presidential election is starting to resemble one of Africa's messy political contests. It's a rare chance for the continent to poke fun at American politics. But analysts say the reality is not funny. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg on Africa's take on this most unusual poll.
African political watchers are humorously skewering U.S. politics in recent Twitter posts describing this year's presidential election in the same language often applied to African elections. Political analyst Ryan Cummings contributed to the several hundred tweets. His observations teased the possible consequences of a disastrous poll, like Mexico shutting its borders amid post-election violence in the United States, or citizens of troubled African nations like South Sudan and Burundi being evacuated from America. Cummings, who runs consultancy Signal Risk from the South African city of Cape Town, says he finds the election bizarre.
It's something that, you know, you wouldn't expect in a established democracy such as that in the United States or pretty much anywhere else, you know, in the developed world. It's something, the claims that are being made, the whole demeanor of Donald Trump in the lead-up to the ballot is something one would readily associate with an African politician.
He declined to compare Trump, the Republican Party nominee, to a specific African leader. As some Africans on Twitter have noted, Trump has mirrored African leaders in more ways than one, notably by saying his opponent should be jailed. That is a tactic used in Ethiopia, Zimbabwe, Zambia, and Uganda, to name only a few examples, after contentious elections. Twitter users note that Trump has, like South Africa's President Jacob Zuma, been accused of sexual assault. And the Twitter world in Africa made the link that, like the longtime authoritarian leader of Gambia, Trump has bragged about his sexual conquests. Like Nigeria's president, he has made comments that many people consider highly misogynistic. And like countless politicians in Africa, Trump has conjectured that the election will be rigged against him. On the other side, Trump's challenger Hillary Clinton is, like many African leaders, a member of an elite political dynasty with deep pockets. A journalist with the International Justice Monitor in Nairobi, Tom Maliti, says Kenyans are mystified by Trump.
There is an element of laughing at the U.S., and it has to do more with how could the American political system produce a candidate like Donald Trump. And then now that he is the candidate, people are concerned that means he does stand a chance of becoming the U.S. president and wondering what that would mean.
But he says this is no laughing matter. Maliti watched up close as his nation went from stability to chaos after its 2007 elections, and says other nations count on the United States to set an example.
Candidate Trump may not realize this, but the American system has been imitated, adapted, and taken up by a variety of African countries, most countries that is. And therefore, the U.S. has stood as a model for African countries that either have had democracy for decades or that are in the process of instituting a democratic culture in their countries.
Tweeters have spanned the spectrum of African political foibles, joking about President Barack Obama changing the constitution to allow himself a third term, as has happened in Burundi, or the United States imposing a social media blackout, as Ethiopia has done. But the jokes cover one grim truth for Africans watching the U.S. election. This is a little too close to home. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The number of South Sudanese refugees in the Democratic Republic of Congo has nearly doubled in the last month. The UN says registered refugees in the eastern DRC has risen from 27,000 in August to 54,000 last month. Ongoing fighting and violence is driving many South Sudanese to flee to neighboring countries. Most have gone to Uganda. Hundreds have died in the South Sudan conflict that broke out in July between troops loyal to President Salva Kiir and former Vice President Riek Machar. Dozens more died in fighting last weekend. Italy's parliament has passed a law that may affect illegal immigrants, many of whom work in the country's agricultural sector. The new legislation, which was approved late Tuesday, cracks down on the widespread exploitation of farm workers with tough new penalties for abuse. It was hailed as a major step forward by trade unions, which say hundreds of thousands of agricultural workers are subject to extreme exploitation. Josephine McKenna explains what the law means for farm owners and intermediaries involved in illegal practices that can result in casual workers taking home little more than a euro an hour for backbreaking work.
Italy is trying to crack down on the exploitation of farm workers, and the lower house of parliament has introduced tough new measures for people who abuse immigrants, particularly those from Africa and South Asia, who are particularly vulnerable. They're being used for farm labour and being paid very, very low rates per day. The law was passed by the parliament late Tuesday. It provides for mandatory prison terms, heavy fines, and the seizure of assets, not only for the farm owners, but also some of the intermediaries who might be involved in exploiting these casual workers. And some of them just take home a few euros a day for what is really backbreaking labour.
How will this law be enforced?
Well, of course, that's always a tricky question in Italy, particularly in these areas where they're quite isolated and perhaps there aren't enough policing measures going on. The new legislation, though, has been hailed as an incredible step forward by trade unions, and they believe that around 430,000 agricultural workers are being subjected to this exploitation across the country. And we're talking about fruit pickers, other seasonal workers who might be picking oranges or tomatoes, and often being paid in cash, enabling employers to really sidestep taxes and payroll taxes.
Can you describe more about these working conditions?
The fruit pickers and the other seasonal workers, mostly migrants, end up with just a few euros a day for what can be 12-hour days and less than half the legal minimum wage. Many of them are working in isolated areas, often in extreme heat in the summer. And we've had situations where people have collapsed and even died, causing incredible scandals here in Italy. There were several deaths on the farms in the summer of 2015, which really shocked the country. And activists believe that the problem is getting worse with the arrival of so many migrants that we've seen in Italy who end up living undercover. They don't want to register in the system, often because they're looking at saving some money or sending some money back home while they move through Italy into other European countries. We've even seen some reactions from migrants against it, but many of them feel really powerless to be able to stand up to this kind of exploitation. Hopefully this law will make a difference.
Also, I understand there's a situation in Milan where they are really struggling with the influx of migrants there. Can you tell us more about that?
The authorities in Milan believe that the city has had increasing requests for accommodation and is really just not coping with the number of migrants, which reached an all-time high over the weekend. Just to give you an example, around 700 migrants were staying near Milan Central Station, and that base is designed to accommodate only around 150, and many are being forced to sleep outside in sleeping bags. Others were being accommodated in canteen and reception areas. So it really is quite extreme. Once again, Italy is trying to deal with this influx. We've seen more than 150,000 migrants arrive in Italy this year. There's still complaints from many councils that the burden is just not being shared equally across the country.
There was an Italian man who was arrested for presumably trying to transport migrants to another country.
This is something that we've seen some evidence of in other countries in Europe, but one of the few occasions in Italy where police in Ventimiglia on the border of France arrested an Italian man. He's accused of supporting illegal immigration and accepting money to transport up to 17 migrants inside his van at high speed towards France, obviously trying to get them into France from Italy and to cross that border illegally. That's the allegation. It'd be interesting to see if any others are caught doing the same thing, because we know that on the border of France, the border controls now are much tighter than they have been in the past. There's still a great deal of tension in that area, and migrants I spoke to in that area just a couple of weeks ago were telling me just how many times they had crossed into France and been forced back into Italy, and the police are on the lookout for more of this kind of behavior, human trafficking essentially across borders in Europe.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna. She spoke with me from Rome.
Twenty past the hour, you are listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. In the western U.S. state of California, a 25-year-old former college student has been sentenced to 30 years in prison for trying to aid the Islamic State group. Muhanda Badawi was convicted last year of attempting to send another man, Nadir El Huzayel, to the Middle East. Both had voiced their support for the terror group on social media, saying it would be a blessing to die in the battlefield. Badawi immigrated from Sudan in 2006. An FBI official says the 30-year sentence illustrates the gravity of the crime and the threat posed to the United States. El Huzayel received the same sentence last month. After the men serve their prison sentences, they will be required to be on supervised release for the rest of their lives.
South African police in Pretoria used tear gas, stun grenades, and water cannons today to disperse more than 300 protesting university students. They were demonstrating in a park next to the residence of President Jacob Zuma. Students are demanding free tuition. Yesterday, South African police fired rubber bullets at protesting university students in Cape Town. A building on the Western Cape University campus was set on fire, and a private security guard was badly beaten during the clash between students and police. All clashes have been canceled or classes have been canceled until the start of the next term in December. Also yesterday, students continued their demonstrations at the University of Witwatersrand in Johannesburg. The government had proposed an 8% tuition increase, but later offered to cancel the increase for poor students. President Jacob Zuma has said the demonstrations have caused $84 million in property damage.
Financially strapped Zimbabwe has exported more than 100 five-year-old elephants to China. Wildlife activists say shipping young elephants by air to China is cruel. Conservationists say it's short-sighted. Zimbabwe says the practice amounts to non-lethal culling and they need the resources to fight poaching. VOA's David Arnold in Washington has the story.
Hwange National Park in northern Zimbabwe is the nation's largest park at 5,600 square miles, and it's home to between 40 and 50,000 elephants. Government officials say that's too many elephants for this park. The Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species of Wild Fauna and Flora, or CITES, reports that between 2000 and 2013, the government of Zimbabwe sold and shipped an estimated 150 elephants to other countries. The chairman of the nonprofit Zimbabwe Conservation Task Force, Johnny Rodriguez, says the government is getting ready to sell and ship 130 more elephants and 80 lions to China for as much as $60,000 apiece. The Minister for the Environment, Water, and Climate, Ms. Opamuchunguri Kashiri, told a Harare Daily newspaper in January that she was pleased with the government's elephant sale and is looking into the export of other species. Muchungiri Kashiri was not available for comment, but the government has described current collection efforts as a relocation to other Zimbabwe parks. Rodriguez has watched activities at some of the screened-off capture sites called embomas and comes to a different conclusion.
If you're going to relocate animals, you relocate the whole families. You don't destroy the social life. We believe with all the cages that they've got already lined up at the Boma where they're going to put these animals, we know that they're going to be exported to China.
Rodriguez says these animals will likely end up at Chimelong Safari Park in Guangzhou, a drive-through park which is part of a large tourism complex in China. The complex includes an international circus, several theme parks, and a companion zoo with the world's largest concentration of white tigers and a giant panda center. Rodriguez talks about how the elephants are selected for this trip to China.
when they capture the babies and put them in embalmers, the mothers actually come quite close and try and call for their kids. It's a nasty way to actually see it. I mean, the fire shots over the elephant's head, the bigger ones run, and the smaller ones, they straggle behind, they capture them, and it's very cruel and inhumane.
Zimbabwe is a signatory to the CITES Treaty that recently voted against Zimbabwe's request to sell a stockpile of confiscated elephant ivory tusks. But the treaty doesn't prohibit the sale and export of living elephants, says Dr. Philip Maruthi of the African Wildlife Foundation in Nairobi, Kenya.
It is not prohibited, but let me just give you our take on this. At African Wildlife Foundation, we do not think that this is a good thing to do, to sell elephant babies to China outside their natural range in Zimbabwe. Someone might argue, you know, we're making money, the money going back to conservation, but we would rather look at other solutions. Is there other revenue streams that can be made? And the kind of tremor this causes is a way of making revenue, but we are for conserving elephants in situ, in their natural habitat. At African Wildlife Foundation, we are very cognizant of the success that, you know, Zimbabwe has been in terms of conserving elephants, particularly at Hwange, and we would like that country to continue being an example of that success.
Maruthi says the government of Zimbabwe should look to a couple of its neighbors for a solution that would keep elephants in Africa.
There are many elephants in Hwange, but that's also a cross-border population. Our proposition is to increase friendly space for this elephant outside that protected area, across even into southern Zambia, into Botswana, and looking at this as one herd, one regional herd, because it is truly is.
Maruthi offers a couple of reasons why Zimbabwe should reconsider their elephant export model. The first has to do with the complexities of population control.
How many elephant babies can one remove from a population in order to control it? I mean, I think that is not a biologically feasible way of doing this, of elephant population control. It is not feasible to control population by selling baby elephants from a population, say, of 40,000. You would have to do this at a massive scale. Nobody really understands the repercussion to the herds that are left, to the future of that elephant population, of these removals, which now seem to be increasing.
Then there's the impact Zimbabwe's global commerce in live elephants might have on progress recently made by the wildlife conservation movement.
The other reason that I would give for us being against this, we do not feel at this time when we are in a poaching crisis that it makes any sense to confuse the message. Our CITES Conference of Parties in Johannesburg made the decision to close domestic ivory markets and to close international markets. This sale of elephants confuses the market. It confuses the message.
Maruthi's last piece of elephant management advice for Zimbabwe is to use tourism revenues to beef up anti-poaching forces. But a new parks policy in Zimbabwe does not appear to be high on anybody's list in a government faced with economic and political troubles. David Arnold, VOA, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Skip Sisk, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
The U.S. presidential election takes place on November 8, 2016. VOA provides extensive coverage of this important political event. Who are the candidates, and what are the issues that will determine who the next president will be? Tune in around the clock for coverage of the U.S. presidential election, right here on VOA.
Feast with your ears on Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best Pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
This one, I judge. This one, I judge. Every show brings you the best music from across the continent. Old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists, too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.